So it's 12:45, we will begin. Welcome aboard. My name's Joshua Gilliland, and I am one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. With me is Angela Story.
I'm Angela Story, I'm with Havison Associates, and I love Star Trek.
Yeah, and we will nerd out, because think about this year. We had Picard Season 3, Strange New World Season 2, Lower Decks Season 4.
Yeah.
Okay. Back in 1983, in that wilderness time, I would not have believed you if I was told we were going to have multiple Star Trek series and an animated series, and it would all be good. And this is the world we live in. So let's get this out of the way. Assumption of risk for wearing a red shirt in Star Trek. Because if you watch the original series, 43 red shirts die out of 59 crew members on away missions. That's a 70% fatality rate. The only fictional characters with a higher fatality rate is the commanding officer of the Battlestar Pegasus. 3 out of the 4 died. 2 murdered. And being a mom in a Disney movie. Highest fatality rate. So, just think about ways that they died. Killed by a plant, vaporized, creepy children beaming you into space, a vampire cloud, turned into a cube and crushed. One of the few times a female was killed.
Turned into a little mineral ball and or cube and stepped on.
So, what's assumption of risk? Well, that's what firefighters and police officers engage in, because they're paid. Their day job is to put themselves in harm's way. However, that means they can't just go out and sue for like an at-work injury, with a couple big exceptions. So you have the fireman's rule, which is, you know what you're doing. Your job is to go out and help people. That's the mission. That's what you're paid to do. However, that does not include intentional conduct. When my mother was a paramedic in the early 1980s, people would call 911, and this is in Los Angeles, and then as the ambulance rolled up, they would shoot at the ambulance for fun. That's why police go in first before fire and paramedics now, so they're not target practice. That's intentional conduct. That's something that they could go sue for. And that's the mission. So it's one thing to be in harm's way. It's another thing to intentionally harm people. Now let's get into diversity in the practice of law. And Star Trek is really good at this. This picture from 1967 is incredible. You have a female lead prosecutor. You have an Indian American as a captain. You have someone of just one white guy.
Yeah. And 3 out of the 4 of the judges in court-martial were people of color.
Okay. The first Indian-American federal judge was appointed by President Obama. We recently just had the first Native American federal judge appointed. That's terrifying. It took up until President Biden for that to happen.
So yeah, Star Trek is way ahead of its time in terms of women in the practice of law. Having that female prosecutor in 1967 would have been unheard of. In fact, Sandra Day O'Connor, when she graduated in 1953, at the top of her class, was only offered a job as a legal secretary.
Does anyone know where she first practiced law? Yes, ma'am. You got it.
Yes.
So, and she came back for the dedication of the courthouse, and I have an autograph from that day.
So, you can see by our chart kind of how women in the practice of law has increased over the years. I would like to point out that women actually make more than 50% of law school students. They just don't go on to continue to practice law. However, Star Trek has always had women within the legal system, and I think almost every single one of their trials, one of the lawyers or judges has been a woman.
Yeah, and in 1967, only 3% of lawyers were women. President Reagan, with a stroke of a pen in appointing Sandra Day O'Connor as the first woman to be on the U.S. Supreme Court, drove up women applying to go to law school.
One place that the legal field really, really has a problem is its general lack of diversity.
Yeah, so this is from 2020. 85% of lawyers are white. Only 5% of lawyers are African American, and only 5% of lawyers are Hispanic. Despite the increased diversity in the United States, these numbers have stayed consistent for the past decade. So when President Biden said, I want to put an African-American woman on the U.S. Supreme Court, good! Because if you don't, things stay the same. We're going to have people who just look like me in positions on the bench. And that's just, you have to represent the country. Which brings us to a TNG episode, The Outcast, addressing gender and sexual orientation discrimination. So for those who might not remember, there was a species that was gender neutral. And one of the characters realized, hey, I'm female. And they put her through a medical procedure to correct that belief.
Conversion therapy.
Not okay. So in California, our gender identity rules are very broad.
Yeah, so we in California, there is a civil code that allows you to officially change your name to conform with your gender identity. The UNRRA Civil Rights Act prohibits discrimination based on gender or gender identity. And the Outcast was ahead of its time. And one of the things that I find really interesting about this one is that Jonathan Franks actually wanted Soren to be played by a man. He thought it would be much more powerful. The producers, however, simply felt that the U.S. was not ready to see that on screen.
Race and Gender Equality. Far Beyond the Stars is one of the most brilliant episodes of Star Trek yet, and also highlights how to feel horrible about the 1950s. It's terrifying. And in it, we have Sisko living as Benny, a science fiction writer. And when they have a group picture day, he and the one woman in the office are told to stay home because they can't have a group picture with a black man or a woman because sci-fi is written by white people. And that's problematic because that's just outright discrimination. So when you look at the Civil Rights Act of 1964, it prohibits that kind of workplace discrimination. And we also have the components for protecting gender as well, because you can't refuse services to human beings because of the color of their skin or their gender. The gender discrimination is right out of D.C. Fontana's life. You know, so they have a character who represents D.C. Fontana, who was one of the brilliant minds behind Star Trek, and went by D.C. because they didn't want anyone to know she was a woman. Just creepy and wrong. You can't do that. You can't discriminate based upon gender or the color of somebody's skin. And Star Trek takes that on in a frontal assault. I mean, this episode, highly recommend it because it addresses ugly issues. Let's talk about gender equality, DS9 episode, where we have Ferengi prenuptial agreements that prohibit women from wearing clothes, owning property, or leaving the house.
And I'm betting also requiring an at-fault divorce.
Probably. So all bad. So when Rom is trying to, get his fiance to sign off on this abomination of a prenuptial agreement, her feeling is no. And she doesn't. So in California, this type of thing would not be legal. You can't have an unconscionable prenup. There are states that are flirting with creepy prenups.
Covenant marriages are currently allowed in Arizona, Arkansas, and Louisiana, starting in 1997. These are actually marriages in which both parties agree ahead of time that they will do certain things before getting a divorce, including marriage or marital counseling, or that they have to prove fault of the spouse, either a substance abuse, domestic abuse, something like that. Right now, in all 50 states, are technically no-fault divorce states. You don't have to prove that your spouse cheated on you. However, in only 18 states, does that make no difference? In the other ones, you can use that to bump up your alimony or your child support.
Yeah, and we became a no-fault state in 1969.
We were the first one. California was the first with no-fault divorce. New York, the last, in 2010.
Yeah, so staying in a bad marriage is not something we value in the society.
Interestingly enough, it was signed by Ronald Reagan, who was twice divorced, yeah. I believe, at that point. So he had some interest in making it a no-fault divorce state.
Having experienced the unpleasantness, let's talk about discrimination based upon religious beliefs. And this is from an Enterprise season 4 trilogy. It's four episodes. You have the Forge, Awakenings, and Kishara. And you have a religious group that's trying to follow, why am I suddenly blanking on the father of logic in Vulcan? Sirach. There are a lot of S names. So Sirach, with what's the original intent? And the Sirenites believe that they understand what the Kishara says because one of them's been carrying Sirach's Katra, and they've been doing that for 2,000 years of somebody passing it along. So you have what turns out to be a Romulan actually running the Vulcan government ordering airstrikes on people because of their religious beliefs. We don't do that. And part of the way to make sure that there isn't that kind of discrimination is through the 14th Amendment. So the 14th Amendment applies to everyone, gives equal protection under the law, and there were periods where there were states conducting racial discrimination. I have a lot of Mormon friends who talk about the Missouri government deciding to hunt them down and their migration to Utah because Missouri said, we're going to eliminate you. Terrifying. So it's kind of like that with the Sirenites. Well, you're not supposed to order airstrikes on people that live in your country.
Probably not a good idea, posse comitatus, which also be an issue there.
Yes. However, Picard season 1 raises an interesting discrimination issue. So you have XBs, former Borg. People who are mutilated and violated by the Borg are getting reclaimed. And all these former Borg are not welcomed back with open arms. People are still a little freaked out about Worf 349. And when you think of what the Borg are, there's good reason to be terrified. However, when people are getting reclaimed, like they have problems getting jobs. We see people, one of them getting like hunted for parts. That's all bad. Well, what kind of laws are at play to prohibit that kind of discrimination? And the answer is lots.
Lots of them.
So to give you the highlights, you have you can prohibit racial discrimination, religion, national origin, age, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity. There's the Americans with Disabilities Act, pregnancy, familial status, veteran status. So like, what's the best way to protect someone who is an XB and is getting discriminated against?
I would say probably best one is falls under the Americans with Disabilities Act. to protect the XBs. A disability is a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. I'd say the XBs fit into that. They've suffered mutilation, mental trauma, they have difficulty moving on with their lives. The question is, what can an employer do and what can't they do? So an employer has to offer reasonable accommodations to allow a qualified XB to do the job. That brings into play, you know, the employer's gonna argue, are they qualified? And can you make a reasonable accommodation for them? I would say some of them obviously are probably better able to handle a job than others, and for those that can, the employers do have to make accommodations under the Americans with Disabilities Act.
So, the more you know. So, yes, we had to cover this one, Measure of a Man. The author of this episode is an attorney. And so I recorded an interview with her this summer, and that's going to be on our podcast channels soon. And it raises all kinds of complex issues of, like, who are we as a society? What do we want to be? And part of that analysis is asking ourselves, what's a fundamental right? Just with the audience, who wants to offer what they think is a fundamental
what's
right?
What's a fundamental right?
Could you say that again? Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? Yes, but we can...
It's more a broad idea. What's an actual right that you have that's fundamental?
Access to food and
health care. Not a fundamental right in the United States.
Right to vote is one.
Free speech.
That's one, because it's enumerated.
Religion.
That's also enumerated. We got five parts of the First Amendment. We've gotten two, so... Freedom of the press, okay. Three. Yes, sir. Right to bear arms. The second. With a well-regulated militia. Yes, sir. Yes, with the mask.
Speech.
Speech, okay.
Yes.
Yes. What was it?
Assembly to protest.
Assembly to protest. Right to assemble.
Mobility rights.
Not a fundamental right.
Different type, but not fundamental. Yes.
The right to move through the country? So that is not an enumerated right in the Constitution. However, the Supreme Court, pulling on different areas of the Constitution, has declared that the right to interstate travel is a fundamental right. I would like to caveat that with, up until most recently, the Supreme Court also has decided that the right to privacy was a fundamental right, and that's no longer a fundamental right in the United States.
Yeah, the only time we've rolled backwards. So,
it's not listed in the Constitution, but the court has decided that you do have the right to travel between states.
So, you have a list.
Fourth Amendment.
Good. Good. So, everything that's enumerated in the Bill of Rights.
Also protection from pirates on the high seas, by the way.
Yes.
That is actually a fundamental right by the court.
The quartering of soldiers, the often litigated Third Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, with you don't have to have the National Guard stay in your house. So, because those are things. So, in Measure of a Man, we have Data getting confronted with the issue of Lieutenant Commander Maddox wants to do experiments on him to find out how androids work so they could make more, which requires Data to be disassembled and might not come back from that. So the issue is, can Data be ordered to do that? Is Data property of Starfleet, or is he a person with agency and can do what he wants? Well, we have a whole bunch of issues tied to this. One is due process of law, that your life and liberty can't be taken from you without due process of law. So what's happening here is that right's being subverted, because it's, I want you to report to be taken apart.
But by giving him a trial, aren't they now giving him due process?
Yes. Now, you are entitled to due process. That doesn't mean it has to be good due process. And that's been a thing. So this is litigated, and it actually comes to a resolution, because not all Star Trek trials come to a resolution. It's like rules of engagement from DS9. Turns out that the evidence was falsified and that extradition hearing is put to a side. Not all of them end. However, this one does, finding that Data does have the right to decide what happens to him. And that's brilliant. So, yes, sir. I would say no, but we had to get there. One of the real elements that they pulled from that was the role of Riker and Picard. So on naval ships, the first officer acts as the prosecutor when there's a court-martial like of that nature. And in this one, the captain's playing defense. And they did that intentionally, because they had people who had served in the Navy go like, hey, check this out. And again, we get to see a captain preside over the court-martial, or excuse me, the proceeding, and that judge is female. So again, representation, 1989, when you're dealing with like 25% of lawyers are women.
Although I do have some issues with practicing law without a license.
Yeah, there's that.
Both Riker and Picard.
Yeah, that sort of thing's weird, but you... When you represent someone, you have to avoid conflicts of interest. And Riker's literally freaked out about this, because he's like, Data's my friend. I don't like having to do this. And if I don't act as the prosecutor, he's just going to go get taken apart. So like, he's given Sophie's choice, and he does the action of trying to save his friend by actually doing his job to the best of his ability.
And this is actually something that comes up a lot with criminal defense attorneys and public defenders. They have a duty to zealously advocate for their client, whether they believe their client is guilty of the most heinous crime you can think of. They have a duty to advocate and defend for their client. They may not like their client, they may not like what their client did, but just like Riker, they've got a job to do, and it's not personal. You have to separate yourself from your client and do your job to the best of your ability.
Yeah, even if you're going to go home and throw up afterwards. Yes?
Can we have an epic CLE for today?
We actually have.
Yes.
Yeah, we've done webinars, and so with equal protection, and Circuit Judge John Owens was on that from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Major trekking.
CLEs are continuing legal education. We have to have so many hours of them every 3 years.
So,
and they're usually really boring classes, so this is much more fun.
Yeah, having suffered through those, we like to make these fun. Part of this, issues with competency, we see in court-martial, because the prosecutor had a relationship with Captain Kirk. It was the 60s. That was their way of trying to add drama. We don't want that to happen. So you have to be competent to practice law. You have to avoid conflicts of interest with current clients. You no sex with the current client unless that relationship existed beforehand, which means that's probably a bad idea to be representing them, because can you competently represent someone that you have a relationship with? And then communicating with an unrepresented person.
This one she absolutely went overboard on. If you're an attorney, and she knew she was going to bring charges against him, she went, sat down with him,
had dinner,
talked about the case. There is an ethics rule for lawyers that you cannot talk to an unrepresented person that you know is going to be a party in one of your cases without making it really clear to them, hey, I'm against you.
But she does recommend Cogley, who is my lawyer spirit animal, because who doesn't want to get to argue rights, rights, I speak to you of rights. Cool. I don't know if I'll ever get to do that. This past season of Strange New Worlds had a trial episode. the actress who played the lawyer in it was a hardcore Trekkie. So, like, the selfies that she took, she was absolutely in nerd heaven getting to play this role. There are a lot of people who love this episode because it's good drama. As an attorney, it gave me high blood pressure. And I say that with all love and respect for Trek and Strange New Worlds. But she takes this case saying, I am doing this for me. And that's when the vein came out of my neck, because you're representing someone. You don't get to do that. Your job is to not further whatever political advocacy you want. It's to represent your client. And she severely throws that out the window with the questioning of Admiral April, her open disrespect to the tribunal. And it's just, it's painful. It's like, she should have been in contempt and thrown into a cell overnight for those antics. Attacking a war hero on the stand, bad trial advocacy, because everyone in the room is going to identify with the witness, not the lawyer asking the questions. The lawyer's not the hero of the story. And this episode throws that out the window, and it's painful. The other missed opportunity that they had in this is the issue of prosecuting Una for being an augment. The charge is she lied on the application. That was a pretextual form of discrimination that we used to throw gay people out of the military. They lied, throw them out. We're not throwing them out because they're gay. We're throwing them out because they lied on the form. And you could have had a powerful story with that, challenging pretextual discrimination with a form. And they walked away from that after acknowledging it.
Yeah, I mean, especially since Star Trek has used its trial episodes to really bring things that are within the social, you know, current social issues that we're facing. This was a missed opportunity. I mean, it was great drama. I loved it. But it was a real missed opportunity, I think.
Yeah, there are people who love this episode and say it's a 10 out of 10. I say 8 out of 10. Yes, sir.
The will of Landrieu.
I wouldn't. You have to be truthful to the tribunal, and that's a challenge right there. But that's a God bless you. I love you.
As a lawyer, you have an ethical duty. You cannot lie about a material fact or law. But I think both Josh and I work Star Trek quotes into our briefs for the court.
there are a lot of judges who quote Star Trek in opinions.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of judges who also work Star Wars into opinions, because who knew that someone who spent lots of time watching Star Trek would eventually be called Your Honor? Because it's a deep, thoughtful show. People who like thinking about complex issues end up with Esquire by their name. And that's part of the beauty of the series. Which brings it to one of my favorite trial episodes, Judgment from Enterprise. And we have it's a full trial that actually gets to resolution. So first off, prosecutors have special rules that apply to them, that you can't bring charges that are made up, that aren't supported by probable cause. We call that bad.
And we also see it a lot.
Yeah, bad. And
there's a question in the back.
Yeah, who? Yes.
I've heard the phrase "you can indict a ham sandwich." So, can't you, based on that, like grand jury stuff, can you like pretty much bring charges against anybody for any reason, practically?
No, I mean, so under the ethical rules, they have to have probable cause and a belief in the charges. Now, in practice,
they might overcharge in order to get a plea. But I'm not a DA nor a public defender, so But I have strong feelings on that.
But in civil, you can sue anyone for anything. It, you may not stick, but you can always file the complaint.
And
it's the bane of our existence sometimes.
You know, you have the writ of habeas corpus, that there's going to be that probable cause hearing where you can challenge the fact that there's no probable cause. So the prosecutor, Orrick, has a problem because he kind of skips that probable cause step. Now we have, you know, as a lawyer, Kolos is just so good because he starts out grumpy and disgruntled, and then he finds his spark, and the magic is back with just some awesome argument. And our rules of competency state a lawyer shall not intentionally, recklessly, with gross negligence, or repeatedly fail to perform legal services with competence. At the beginning, he's just kind of dialing it in. He doesn't cross the key witness. You know, he's disgruntled. But he gets his mojo back and really swings for the fences. Now, let's talk about parental liability.
All right. So you've got a child who can do just about anything, including create planets, and you let him out into the solar system. He kidnaps a bunch of people. False imprisonment, perhaps damages some property. Are his parents responsible? Guess what? In California? Yeah. As a parent, you are responsible for the willful misconduct of your child if it results in injury or death to another person or damage to property. And in fact, in California, has one of the higher civil liabilities of, I believe, $25,000. And this is whether, so keep an eye on your kids.
Yeah, and other states, it's capped at
$5,000. But so, in California, they want you to watch your children.
Yeah. Don't dial it in. So, yeah, you can be liable for acts of your children, or in some cases, the computer program that you make that gets homicidal. So is Rutherford and Lower Decks liable for creating Badgie? And the answer is yes. And I would say strict liability would apply because Badgie does not perform as designed. He's violent. He doesn't have safety protocols. None of that should have made it out of beta testing. Now, Rutherford has some issues with, you know, we've all done stupid things to impress a woman. He's trying to impress Tendi, and he's, you know, mean to Badgie. And so Badgie learns negative conduct because of Rutherford's actions. However, he's going to end up liable for what Badgie does. And they do resolve Badgie's arc brilliantly in season 4. Are tribbles an invasive species? The answer is tribbles are an invasive species. Yeah. You feed them and they breed. They will disrupt the environment. They will replace what's there. That's the definition of an invasive species.
Yeah. As cute as they are, under federal law, they would qualify as an invasive species.
So let's talk about the Horda from The Devil in the Dark. Brilliant.
Great episode.
So good. But we have the issue of, like, the Horda is the last of her kind. She has millions of eggs that are about to hatch. We have the miners who are just destroying thousands of these eggs. So she starts killing because she's trying to protect her nest, which is what happens. Well, is the Horda an endangered species? Is it endangered or threatened? Well, the miners are killing her eggs, and she's the last of their kind. Yeah, all of these rules would apply that she is endangered because her habitat has human beings going in with mining equipment, killing thousands of them at a time. Endangered. Now, what I would love to see after peace is resolved and everyone realizes, whoops, what the group therapy would look like. Because think of the miners who's like, okay, my buddy Tom was melted. I heard him scream as he died. But I have to live with the fact I killed thousands of Horda. How do you process that?
I mean, they did end up working together, although if we were to follow the Endangered Species Act itself, the miners would have to pull out. They would not be allowed to continue mining because it would be encroaching onto an endangered species habitat. The fact that they were able to find a mutually beneficial way to live together, I think, kind of speaks to Star Trek and its ability to bring people together.
So that would put them in the endangered category because they haven't hatched yet.
Okay.
And with them being actively killed and only one left, this is clearly in the endangered category. So let's talk about Q and the Trial of Humanity. Because Next Gen begins and ends with a trial. And it's a scary trial because... Oh, boy. So Q is both the judge and the prosecutor. We don't like that.
And executioner.
Yeah.
Judge, no. Jury, and executioner.
No, we don't like that. The crew of the Enterprise is charged with the crimes of all humanity. I wasn't there at the beginning. Sorry. We didn't do this.
And there is law within the United States that says you can't charge someone simply because they're a member of a group. The charge has to be specific to that person.
Yeah. The crew had not been arrested, read their Miranda rights, arraigned, or given the right to an attorney. Yes?
Do the Miranda rights exist in this universe?
Yes, they do. So it's like their Seventh Amendment would be their...
Seventh guarantee. Yeah.
Yep, and that, like, they bound it up. So I've often believed, since Archer's from California and he was instrumental in the founding of the Federation, is why we see U.S. law brought in to the Federation. But there's a lot of European qualities to the Federation law. And I would say that Klingon law is a lot like ours, except it's more rough and tumble.
Our system is designed to be adversarial in nature. It's not necessarily a cooperation between two sides. It is adversarial fight nature, which is what the Klingon law is. Whereas Federation, it's a little more investigatory on all parts. So
yeah, there's parts of Canadian law that are a lot like that, with the way they have undertakings for getting information. That's kind of like, we have requests for production, special interrogatories, requests for admissions. They kind of merge them, and it's different than what, like, we do here. But I've worked on cases that have Canadian co-counsel, and looking at that, it's like, well, that's different, because it's different. So, back to Q. He's not a neutral judge. Definitely putting his thumb on the scale. All of that's bad. And, of course, Picard's, you know, if you don't plead guilty, I will shoot you. We call that duress.
And when you plead to a crime, one of the things the judge asks you is, are you making this plea voluntarily? And has anyone threatened or coerced you into making this plea?
All bad. But... by the end of All Good Things, we see that Q is actually a fan of humanity. And part of the ambiance and love of Star Trek is humanity is the key to the story. You watch the original motion picture, and you know the ending credit is the human adventure is just beginning. You know, with the end of, I watched Star Trek III Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. And on the closing lines of Jim, your name is Jim. It's about that connection that you have. The crew of the Enterprise go like, so we're going to save Dr. McCoy and Spock's soul, and I'm okay going to prison for that. That's taken a big one for the team, because you just want to save your friend. Voyage home. That's a huge element of the voyage home. It's about people working together to solve problems. you know, the last generation, the final episode of Picard season 3, you have, you know, Picard talking to Jack with, if you will not go, then I will stay, which I was crying by then. And then I know where they are. I was cheering. Because it's humanity, it's love for each other, it's giving a damn. That's the winning element. And that's throughout all of Trek, that quality of, it doesn't matter who you are, the color of your skin, how tall you are, your gender, you're welcome here, there's a place for you, and that's the bright future that Trek has. It's what we aspire to, and you don't get that without law. You have to have laws that protect your rights in order for that world to exist. So, to highlight, just a fun closing, when I was in the eighth grade, I nearly died from Crohn's disease. And the odds of dying were higher than surviving. So I thought it was a no-win scenario when I was a kid. And now I see it more as part of my tapestry. And my godmother asked her sister, who was a florist in Beverly Hills, to get a note to Leonard Nimoy, who was one of her clients. That was successful. Nimoy sent me a get well card while in the hospital. In 2000, that was 1990. 2009, Nimoy gave the keynote at a computer forensic legal conference. 900 people are there. I'm in the wave of the first 30 to just go up and say thank you. I had it planned out, took under 10 seconds. And as I moved away, because of the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, big hand came down and stopped me on my shoulder. So I know what it's like to get the Vulcan neck pinch now. He stopped me 3 times to ask questions. The first words out of his mouth were, I'm very glad I did that. And conversed, thanked him, and my boss at the time took a picture. Sadly, that's how I look happy. There is no cure. And it's why I didn't have children. So, but with that, we have time for questions. And this is... Yes, ma'am.
So you mentioned a court martial, and I think it came up a few times that, like, Starfleet is a military; it falls under martial law. How does that affect the trials and the legal rights that the members of Starfleet have?
So the question is: Starfleet is a military organization conducting a court martial. How does that impact the rights of those who are accused? And the answer is, military law does echo a lot of civilian law because the rights are the same. You do have the Uniform Code of Military Justice that gives some additional requirements, like conduct unbecoming is a no-no. So they are a good frame of reference for being able to discuss legal issues. However, you know, there are some differences. We have a couple of members who do blog posts and podcasts who are JAG officers. So they're really good at that. One's Thomas Harper. He's now at the American Red Cross. And we've done lots of Star Wars content together. So we could get into a little more with him.
And in court martial, they actually enumerate out some of the fundamental rights that are available for the Federation, including trial by peers, right to be represented by counsel, right to cross-examine, and the right to confront witnesses. They actually spelled that out to let us know as we're watching this, hey, these are the same rights that we've got now or at the time.
And it's Coakley being his best with, you know, going for, like, again, I speak to you of rights, because the issue is, can a computer print out, convict you? And you have to have admissible evidence. And there are ways to go in and show something's admissible because it's trustworthy. What Spock does in being able to show that the computer readings are not trustworthy is how they win the case, with taking a sidestep for Finney and being in orbit and all that good stuff.
I mean, and the one I love about that is we're still dealing with those issues.
Yeah.
Was the blood test accurate to determine whether or not my client was a DUI or not? Was the machine calibrated properly when they did the blow test? I mean, we're still dealing with the computer somehow tampered with before we downloaded the data. We're still dealing with these issues in court every day.
Red light cameras.
Oy.
So, yeah, there's a lot there. You in the front, then the back, and then back to the front.
Under the precedent established by the measure of a man, would ChatGPT qualify for legal rights?
Not yet.
Doesn't have a body yet.
So the issue of does ChatGPT qualify for legal rights, I say no because it's repeating things. But the issue of whether or not something is sentient is an open question, because there are some who believe that there are programs that have become sentient. And so we will eventually deal with that in court at some time. In the back?
This is international law, or international situation, out of war under the Soviet occupation.
Okay.
And, you know, what's really related to my life, like the DS9 was like, oh my God, your shit. How do you see Star Trek tackling those global issues?
So the question is about Star Trek tackling global issues of occupations, take over. The answer is they do a great job. DS9 was, to quote Matt Weinhold, who's a comedian, and he's in the last moments of Trekkies, is TNG is what we want to be. Deep Space Nine is what we are. And DS9 deals with the ugly, messy issues of Bajor refuses refugees. They know what it's like to go through hell, and they tell people, get lost. Like, they don't have a happy ending in that episode. So Trek brings those issues up because if the people are green, we can talk about it. If they look like a race here on Earth, we can't. And that's how, you know, Rod Serling worked the Twilight Zone, and Gene Roddenberry worked civil rights issues in the 60s because let's make the guy half black, half white. That's no subtext. Yes, sir.
I got here a little late, so maybe I missed it, but there was an episode in Next Generation called The Drumhead.
Yes.
Did you talk about that?
Not this time. We have in the past.
It's one of my favorite legal episodes. Is it's just everything that happens.
It is one of my absolutely favorite episodes, and that's the one where I talk about how that's more a European type tribunal where it's investigatory, but I think Drumhead was as relevant now, maybe even more so than when it originally came out.
So they skip the rights of the accused pretty quickly. They also skip counsel representing someone. You know, so the ensign who gets his career, or the enlisted man who gets his career destroyed, like wrong. Yeah, it's like
a form issue.
Yeah, it's like oops. So there are lots of issues with that. Of like, I didn't want to disclose I had a great grandfather who was Romulan, like. Lot to unpack there. It's a brilliant episode. Council was not strong. Picard's confronting an admiral's great, and the fact that the admiral JAG officer walks out, that's how they kill the proceedings. Like, good. You have to have the courage to say this is wrong. So when the zero tolerance policies of the Trump administration were taking place, a federal judge in San Diego that was dealing with that said there's nothing like hitting the weakest the hardest. And I want to say, like, so who's stopping that? Who's standing up in court and saying this is wrong?
I mean, one of the best lines in there is, if I quote it right, is we go from, you know, legitimate suspicion to rampant paranoia. How fast we do that is scary.
Yes, ma'am. Then.
So
Yeah. HIPAA.
HIPAA. So
it seems to change.
So the question is, are we just seeing gross HIPAA violations in sick bay? And the answer is sometimes. So telling the CO what somebody was injured with and what they need to do, like that, I believe is okay because it's part of the chain of command. You know, there you can sign forms about advanced health directives. Like I can see that being okay. However, there's a Lower Decks episode where you have one character hitting on a woman and Tendi makes a comment about him having like low bone density. And that's a HIPAA violation. So that was a boo-boo on her part.
And there are some episodes where a crew member comes in and talks to the doctor and says, you know, I don't want anybody to know this. And the doctor responds, unless it affect, I think it's going to affect your ability, then I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah. So, yes. Yes. So we actually did a podcast, you know, when we started with all the trial episodes. We should do a revisit because there have been a couple more since then. We did talk about the Strange New Worlds episode. We also talked about Veritas, the Lower Decks episode. So we've hit them all by now.
And I think they are.
Do we have a full list? We did with the first podcast about it. Yeah, I think our time
is up.
So thank you all. You can ask your questions outside.